Greetings and welcome to Maroos Monday, the official podcast of the Maroos Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by John Roering, Jacob Kanzler, and Abigail Walls. A little later, we're going to be speaking with the Senate Minority Leader, Jim Ananick. But first, guys, we're going to have a 7th State of the State address from Rick Snyder on Tuesday. A couple questions to start with. First of all, what is he going to say about Detroit public schools? Is he going to mention the looming potential shutdowns of Detroit public schools? And does he say he's just going to take it off the table, John?
I think he addresses anything looming in terms of the Detroit public school. I think he thanks the legislature for passing the legislation they passed, and then I think he moves on.
What do you think, Jacob? Because there is this specter of some schools getting shut down by the school reform office. This could be an opportunity for Governor Snyder to extend the olive branch to Detroit lawmakers and say, hey, listen, we're not going to shut down any schools. In fact, I'm not exactly sure that this path that we're taking in regards to monitoring poor performing schools is the correct path. Maybe taking a page out of Senator Pavlov.
Yeah, possibly. Here's what we know right now. There's going to be some kind of announcement related to these schools that have been on the failing schools list for a long time. According to State Superintendent Brian Wisson, who's told me twice, that closure is still an option. So Snyder could do, in the state of the state, use that uninterrupted platform to give an explanation as to why or why not they would eventually end up closing schools. Or he could announce one of the other closure or one of the other options in terms of appointing a CEO to one of the schools, so things like that. So, yeah, the state of the state might be a strange place to do that, but it might be a chance for him to go out on his platform and say, here's why we need to do this. These schools have failed too long. These kids deserve better.
Because as it stands right now, Abby, he's not going to get any standing ovation from Detroit lawmakers in regards to how he's handled Detroit public schools.
I think it would be foolish to say that, to even expect that heading into this policy topic that he does need to touch on for the state of the state, that he's going to get any overwhelmingly warm response from Detroit lawmakers. I think there's still a lot of, I think hurt feelings is too trite a term, for how Detroit lawmakers feel about the package that was passed by the legislature last year.
But that wasn't his fault, was it? I mean, because he wanted this Detroit Education Commission, it was the House that said no to that.
I think that's true, but there is a sort of tie between the Republican executive and head of state and the Republican legislature.
Okay, so we'll see what he says on that. Flint, John, how much time does he spend on any type of plans or any type of legislation he'd like to see in regards to Flint?
I think other than saying that they made progress on the water with the water testing, I don't think you really need to touch on it at all. Flint is never going to be a winning issue for Rick Snyder, and I don't think he really should focus that much on it in this 7th state of the state.
If he doesn't, though, he's going to get hammered.
He's going to get hammered about Flint either way. I mean, even if he addresses Flint, there are going to be people on the other side that are going to say he never did enough. He's responsible. He should go to jail. There are always going to be people are crying out there that that it's his problem and he created it.
If he doesn't address Flint, though, Jacob, does that give the legislature a pass not to do any Flint-related legislation in the upcoming session? I mean, if the governor doesn't mention it, it must not be a priority.
I mean, you could certainly take that inference. I mean, the caucuses will be putting out their own priorities and, you know, the legislature will get banged on their own for not acting on that report quicker that they put out last fall. I would say with the governor last year, we had a similar discussion. You know, what does Snyder say about in the state of the state with Flint? There was a certain amount of, you know, public contrition that he needed to put forward. I would say this year, the focus needs to be, the Flint should probably be acknowledged, and it should be acknowledged in the fact that the governor and the administration should put out a clear, concise explanation of here's where it was, here's what we've done, really put that out there and explain, here's what we've done to positively impact that. That's been their story all year. They've used that in the face of what they perceive political attacks from this person or that person. So this would be a chance to see, we have rolled up our sleeves and put our boots on the ground, and here's what we've done. So there should be some time spent on that.
I just don't think it should be very, very much time, because remember, there's only two of these speeches left for this guy. And if he wants to separate himself from Flint at all, these are the occasions he's got the opportunity to do it.
I see John's point, but I also think you're addressing both chambers at one time. You're giving a formal report of the condition of the state. I do think, though, as he lays out his priorities, he needs to not shy away from the word Flint. There are a lot of euphemisms that get kicked around for Flint issues, you know, infrastructure reform. You know, all of a sudden, because of Flint, we suddenly really care about the pipes that are underneath the ground and other sewage issues, you know, in bigger areas of the state. But I think not wrapping up Flint into this overly broad problem and giving it its day would give him a lot of political credit to at least not make Flint a taboo term in his office.
I would be surprised if he mentions any cut to the income tax. Anybody else?
I would almost put money in that he won't.
Yeah, I just don't think that's a rail he wants to touch, does he?
Oh, heck no.
Why not?
I mean, his thing is that he's an accountant, and I don't think, you know, if you look at how painstakingly the governor combs through individual bills for their fiscal impact, I don't see him just all of a sudden on a whim getting behind a $9 billion hole in the budget.
Well, not getting rid of the income tax, but what if we scale it back to 3.9, which is what the Republicans want to do at a minimum?
I just don't see him going there. I don't.
The numbers don't work.
It's possible. It's possible.
The numbers don't work for an accountant like him.
It would certainly give him a different kind of headline than most of us probably think he's going to pursue. But
I'm certainly not anything that I'm expecting here. Taking a look at this income tax reduction, the Democrats have mentioned that this is a political tactic that House and Senate Republicans are leading off the session with. Is it just political pandering, or you guys think that they're serious about passing something?
They're going to get into the budget soon, and they'll figure out if they can either be forgotten or someone will keep the drumbeat up. I mean, they're going to get to the budget and realize how much tight the general fund has been lately.
I mean, the best argument we've heard, or you know, at least I've heard for why this is a priority is it's a promise we've made to the citizens of Michigan. Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at economic statuses, people are just barely, or economic statistics, people are just barely beginning to feel okay about what's in their wallets and what's in their bank accounts after the recession. So, I mean, I think giving back money to people making that promise is an easy sell. But I think really what, if you dive into those numbers, what people are looking for is greater economic freedom, more job security. I think there's a little bit more to it than just giving them more money.
And then when you really start digging into it, John, we haven't even seen what the stories look like when they have hearings on it and somebody does the calculation on what a 0.1 percentage point cut in the income tax means to the average person. And then we're going to start getting those stories that it's, you know, like a lunch at McDonald's,
yeah,
maybe.
It's window dressing. Politically, I understand why you want to say you cut the income tax. But on the other hand, you know, this is a state that's still struggling to fund its cities. We still have a number of cities that are, you know, are on the brink. We have a lot of issues that aren't being addressed. I just think to cut the income tax at this point is kind of foolish, unless you're going to adjust the whole tax structure, maybe to put sales tax on services and make up the revenue that way.
I think this is the point I'm kind of trying to make here as well, is people don't just judge their economic well-being by the amount of money that they don't pay to the government. They judge it by, does my kid go to a good school? Is my road repaired? And if you start chipping away at the revenue stream that funds all of those things, I don't know that you're going to make Michiganders that much happier.
Oh, and to Abby's point, mentioning the line that, you know, this is a promise you made to Michigan voters, this is a promise not kept that has not penalized the ruling party since it's been made.
Let's end this discussion here with a rock-solid guarantee, and we are taping Friday afternoon, so if there has been any type of leaks that have come out of the governor's office Saturday, Sunday, we do not know about them at this point. Rock-solid guarantees on what we expect Governor Snyder to put in his message as far as a recommendation for the legislature to do this year.
Municipal retirement health care reform.
That's where I was going to go. Yeah. Abby?
I think health care, dealing with health care. In time of Trump.
Okay.
Some sort of corrections reform.
Corrections reform.
Justice or addressing sentencing, something to reduce the prison costs.
I'm going to say that he's going to say something about the Healthy Michigan program and urging Trump and the Republicans in Congress to save it somehow. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, the state is not in a position to come up with a $3.5 billion to save it on its own.
Kyle just said my guess, but better.
I thought you were agreeing with Jacob.
No. I think that the big issue, the one thing the governor has absolute control over and needs has absolute say-so on and needs to work with the legislature on is preserving Healthy Michigan, no matter what happens at the federal level.
And you might be running into the timeliness aspect. Today, Friday, there was another procedural hurdle cleared in Congress that's setting up, you know, a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. So the drumbeat's only going to get louder from Snyder and Democrats and anyone else who's a fan of the program to preserve it.
Okay, well, we'll be watching just like everybody else, unless you're watching the DeVos confirmation hearing. which is conveniently at the same time. And you can make of that what you will.
What screen going on?
Oh, man, I don't know if I can do the split attention on this. We're going to have Simon watch it here. And maybe I'll actually have to go to the Capitol this year and watch the State of the State. Let's move on to the Senate Minority Leader, Jim Hansen.
Joining us on the other end of the line is the Senate Minority Leader. He is Jim Ananick. Good morning.
Good morning, Kyle. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the governor is going to be giving his State of the State address. Let's start with what you hope. What do you hope the governor talks about?
Well, I think he has a responsibility to on a couple fronts. There's the obvious one of Flint, but I think one of the other ones that is starting to unfold and turn into sort of another scandal is sort of this unemployment insurance agency, the stuff that we're seeing coming out of there where tens of thousands of people, you know, had their money basically stolen from them, from the government. And instead of sort of finding out a way to make them whole, they're trying to use statute of limitations and other things like that. I think that's just ridiculous. I mean, when the government, steals money from people under false pretenses using some sort of, you know, computer system that they knew after, I mean, it was 5 years. This went on for 5 years. There's a point in time when somebody in that department should have said, hey, there's something going on here. It was another campaign official that had the job, and instead of being fired, they were just, you know, moved around in the administration again. I think this is a big story, and I think that he has a responsibility to outline what steps they're going to take to make people whole and at the same time make sure this never happens again. I think that's one. I'd like to see that because, you know, when you're going through the unemployment agency and you're applying for the benefits that you've earned, many times you're at the lowest point of your life because you've lost a job to no fault of your own. And, you know, someone tells you you committed fraud and they charge you up to 400% interest. That's just ridiculous. So, I mean, I think that needs to be outlined. This sort of, you know, kind of sending out a press release and moving somebody over there and saying, okay, everything's fine now. You know, it doesn't help the thousands of constituents that every single senator and every single rep has. If someone says they don't have somebody who has this problem in their district, then they're not very connected to their district because it's happened to everybody, all of us in the legislature. And I think we have a responsibility to fix it if he doesn't outline a plan to do so.
Talk about this UIA thing a second since you brought it up, because didn't the state have a responsibility at a certain point to say, hey, listen, we're facing a civil lawsuit, we have to defend ourselves. So wasn't the state kind of put back on its heels from the get-go, and didn't they have a responsibility to try and protect itself?
Well, I think they have a responsibility to protect itself, but at the same time, I mean, government set up to protect the people. And the fact that they for so long, used a computer system that was completely flawed. And, you know, there was times throughout this last year and before where there were signs that there was a problem. And obviously, you know, you got to do what you got to do in a court case. But generally, if you come forward with a proactive plan to help resolve a problem, lawsuits aren't necessarily needed. You know, I mean, people go to a lawsuit because they've reached a point in time where they feel like all the remedies they've tried to seek from the person who's wronging them has been ignored or brushed off. And if they just would have dealt with this in the beginning or even still to this day and figure out a way to fix this problem, I have an assumption. I don't know for a fact. I haven't talked to the attorneys because I would never communicate with when there's a court case going on. But, you know, I think they have a responsibility to fix this, and I think there's a way to do that.
Now, what's the second thing you hope that he talks about in hearing his State of the State?
Well, obviously, you know, being a representative and from one of the representatives from Flint, I hope that he has that he talks about that. And I think I have a few ideas that I'd like to see him talk about, and I also think, you know, it's still to this day referred to as the Flint water crisis. I think we need to see a plan to say, okay, when is this no longer going to be a crisis? When is this going to be something that people can live a normal everyday life in Flint? And that's not exactly an easy thing to outline, but I think it's, you know, I think there needs to be a path so that people have a vision of when this is going to no longer be a case where you have to wake up and drive to a water service center to get your water. So I think that's something I'd like to see.
How would you grade how Governor Snyder is doing with the Flint water crisis? I mean, if you had to grade him just for 2016, all right, not prior, but
sure.
Since he's acknowledged that this is a problem and since his last State of the State, how would you grade him? You're a former teacher. What would you give him, a C, a B, a D? What would you say?
Well, you know, I'd probably give him an incomplete because there's still a lot of areas where, you know, the public doesn't feel that the government's listening to them. And there's still plenty of areas, especially when it comes to infrastructure, where, you know, there's only been about 700 lines replaced. And, you know, I think that's something that until that problem gets resolved, it's hard to give them any sort of passing grade or any sort of, A through F grade, because that's something that, I mean, that happened because of the corrosive water that was untreated. And the damage is done there. Now, obviously, the water quality, we've seen experts talk about it, is improving, and that's an important step. And then some of the programs are starting to work or have a positive effect on people as well. But that's a big one that needs to be addressed. And one of the things that I was going to say is that there's a substantial amount of one-time money in this year's budget. And I think that should be dedicated to underground infrastructure. A fund of money for underground infrastructure across the state, and obviously the first project should be the city of Flint. And because we know this is a problem that's going to happen everywhere, and it's one-time dollars, we should seed a fund to do underground infrastructure. We've talked about it. The governor's 21st Century Infrastructure Fund mentioned that the commission mentioned that there's a problem, and I think that's a perfect thing to do with those dollars. And I think obviously pipe replacement in Flint, especially since we have federal money, a dollar for dollar match with the federal dollars, to me would make a huge improvement in the quality of life of the people in Flint. It would also show that we're going to deal with this problem, and we're going to be on the cutting edge all across the country of this issue. I think we should do that. I think the taxpayers of Michigan deserve that, and citizens of Flint, of course, do as well.
Is there anything else you hope that the governor talks about during the State of the State?
Well, one of the things I think is important, I hope to see, and I'm sure we'll see some of it, but I'd like to see a big focus on, is sort of jobs and economic security. I think a lot of folks do not feel, the so-called recovery that we've had in the state. Obviously, in many things, the auto industry is doing very well, and some other industries are starting to improve a little bit. But you go to a lot of places, and pretty much in probably everyone's district, and talk to regular folks, they just don't feel it yet. So I think we need to have a plan to address that. And some of the things you could do, and some of the areas where I think we'd see bipartisan support and continued bipartisan support is, workforce development. We know there's lots of jobs that are available, and we have lots of folks that are looking for work. And in many cases, the skills don't match up. So I think we need to accelerate programs like that to make sure that people that are looking for work have the necessary tools to get the jobs that are available out there. I also think we need to do some things to make sure that people have the ability to go to work. I've been talking a little bit about it with my colleagues over the end of last year and had some ideas myself. One of the things that is a big barrier for folks, and you might be able to relate to this yourself, Kyle, is child care reform. I think one thing, access to child care is important, but also quality. And I think the spectrum for quality is all over the place. There's many really good programs out there, and then there's some where you're just basically dropping it off a kid at a neighbor's house and hoping that the quality there is good. And I think we can do better than that. And I think there's ways to do it by, the Great Start Readiness Program, I believe, for four-year-olds. We can move that down to make sure that all three-year-olds and four-year-olds have access to it. There's some other things that I think we could do that expand access and make sure that, and then we can obviously do more to make sure the quality is good. I think that's one of the big barriers to getting people to work, because they don't feel comfortable leaving the child, sort of an uncertainty, and that makes people make decisions. And if we could guarantee they had good quality child care, I think you'd also see folks entering back into the workforce again.
What I'm going to be interested to hear is how he responds to these calls now to get rid of the income tax, or at least scale it back. Because when you start talking about getting rid of a tax like that and without a replacement, you got to start scaling back costs. If you look at the Snyder administration's biggest black eyes that it has received, they are all related to, in some ways, trying to cut costs. Flint, you're trying to cut costs. The military and veterans homes, they tried to cut costs. And
corrections
with the food service, they tried to cut costs, and that blew up in their face. And so how many more of these instances, and I think he's starting to learn, you start cutting costs, and that's what's going to happen when you cut the income tax, and you get another black eye.
And I think, without question, I think the citizens of Michigan deserve some tax relief. I mean, they've had 6 years of one way or another forms of tax increases while they cut the corporate income tax by such a large margin. And I think, there's ways to sort of give people benefits at the same time without sort of, coming up with these sort of unrealistic tax cuts that they know they don't have to be held accountable for. I mean, if they were serious about it, they do it all in one fell swoop. Doing it over some sort of 40-year time frame or whatever they're talking about just means that their actions aren't held accountable for the terrible decisions they make now. I mean, I'll tell you right now, and you can quote me on, you're going to quote me on the whole thing because it's a podcast, but this is an important thing to say, and I'll say this again on the floor if they move forward with this. This right here is the blueprint for the next lost decade. I promise you that. It's the same thing that happened in the end of the 90s that caused the problems in the 2000s, along with the recession, that caused for such a bad decade for us. This is the blueprint for the next one. And I think anybody that can see this happening and does it anyway should be ashamed of themselves.
But I see where you're going with this, because Governor Inglis cut the income tax to 3.9, and then when it got down to rough economic times, the money wasn't there to fund universities and wasn't there to fund local governments. But you almost got to wonder here if this isn't Republicans setting up the Democrats to have to raise taxes again. You wonder if that isn't maybe this is a political ploy, realizing that if they lose majority because of Trump, and maybe I'm getting too ahead of myself here, but you know, let's say they lose majority because of Trump in 2018, and then tough economic times come because you know all the economy's cyclical, and we got to get back into a position where a Democrat, let's say a Democratic governor, and a Democratic House, let's just say, and then Senate, why not? We'll have to raise taxes back again.
No, I mean, well, you never know, right? I mean, I hope they wouldn't be that Machiavellian, but you never know, right? I mean, there was no what they did in the late 90s obviously caused, you know, catastrophic conditions in the 2000s. I mean, the state probably hurt the worst was due to the things they did at the end of the 90s, and you know, the divided government where people weren't willing to make responsible decisions. I mean, obviously, that we can't let that happen again. And I think we have a responsibility not to let that happen again. We're already seeing sort of budget gimmicks to pay for the roads, which is exactly what I said would happen. Well, I passed it. I said, we're going to come back, and you're going to come back for more taxes, which they've done already a couple times in other areas to make so they can gimmick a roads deal that's not going to be good in the first place. I mean, the roads deal was bad. It was never going to fix any roads, and to sort of, you know, they're talking about it with the income tax. So we'll have some of the refund come out of the school aid fund now. It's all it is a gimmick to pay to backfill a roads deal that was never good in the first place. So I mean, I think this sort of one time, these sort of gimmicks and blueprints for disaster, we can do better than that. And I think we've shown over the last 6 years when we do work together, we can pass some really important and good stuff. Whether it's you know, grand bargain, I think the energy legislation we passed last year is going to be productive. I think that the minimum wage increase that we passed will help stimulate the economy. A number of really important things we've done together, and there hasn't been too many when they've done alone that have been very good. So I hope that they say we're going to put politics aside and we're going to find a solution to some of these problems. And it may be tough, but, you know, tough decisions usually is what leaders do. So I hope that's the direction they go.
Senator Minority Leader Jim Hanemick, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Kyle. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Jim Hanemick for taking time with us this morning. Also the boss, John Ruhrink, Abigail Walls, and Jake Kanzler. I'm Kyle Mullen. Until next week, take care.